You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Athletic Hockey Show on this Tuesday. My name is Julian McKenzie. I'm filling in for Ian Mendez. Normally I'd be filling in for Haley, and Haley's not here. So Sean Gentile is here. So Sean and I are hosting for Ian and Haley on the Athletic Hockey Show. I'm as confused as you are.
Wait a second. You forgot a very important part of the equation.
Wait, what's the important part of the equation I'm forgetting here?
It's that you and Ian were originally subbing for me and Craig because it's Tuesday.
Yes. So I'm because, literally filling in for the film.
Because we gave, because we spelled you guys on Monday because of Victoria Day, which is a holiday that I've known has existed for 48 hours now. So this is like, we need to like do a trade tree maybe, or like break this down, you know, really, really overdo it. But I think like the main takeaway here is that I am substituting for myself, I think, is where is where we're at. Cause I'm back in the chair for Tuesday. I don't know. I like Chris needs to maybe play the national anthem, play the Tuesday Boys intro over this or half of it. I don't know. I'm very confused.
You're confusing me right now. this is wild. You know that?
Yeah, you guys can't see this, but I have like a whiteboard behind me and I'm drawing a very elaborate diagram over who ended up where and why we ended up there and now we're both very confused.
You kind of look like Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, so you could recreate that. It's like scene where he's like,
yeah, I got stacks of Pepe. I'm drawing lines with yarn. Yep, that's me.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. How many times have you been told you look like Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny?
I got it, brother. In like 2008 or so, it was happening a lot. Like at the peak of It's Always Sunny, like right around the time I grew a beard, it was happening a lot.
Okay, we're going to try not to make this podcast too much of a comedy session. There are some NHL topics. Yeah, whatever. We're good. There are some NHL topics we have to get to.
That's what Joe's for. Joe Smith was our guest. He brought the actual analysis on the Tampa Bay Lightning in the second segment.
That is very true. We will have him, but I do want to talk about Nazem Kadri and what the last few days have been like for him and the Colorado Avalanche and the St. Louis Blues series. Even though we do touch off on a lot with the Tampa Bay Lightning with Joe Smith, there seems to be a very interesting alleged story surrounding the Florida Panthers, who are now out of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll also take the time to look ahead for game fours between the Battle of Alberta teams in Calgary and Edmonton, the Rangers as well, and the Carolina Hurricanes. And I put out a Twitter question of the day. We'll get to the answers for that because of the fact that Sean and I are backups today coming in. We want to know who you think the best or your favorite backup goalie in NHL history is. So we have
I just checked some of the results. They're starting to roll in, baby.
We're going to get some on the way here, but I want to start with Nazem Kadri first because he gets himself his first Stanley Cup playoff hat trick against the St. Louis Blues in game four, puts the series up 3-1 in favor of the Colorado Avalanche. But that is only striking the surface of mm-hmm. what it has been like for Nazem Kadri these last few days. We think of game 3, where he's involved in the collision with Callie Rosen into Jordan Binnington. Binnington looks as if he's out for the rest of the series. A water bottle is thrown during an interview involving Kadri on TNT. Threats are then sent his way online. And then the game happens. Well, before the game happens, Craig Berube asked to comment on them, at least announce them. And he mm-hmm. says no comment. David Perron kind of says something, but not really. Then we get to the ice and mayhem breaks loose at one point between Perron, Pavel Buchnevich, and Nazem Kadri. I know I'm kind of bringing up the details. It's a little scattered, but a lot has taken place. And it all leads to Nazem Kadri scoring a hat trick, which puts the Colorado Avalanche up ahead 3-1 in their series. Sean, let's try to break this down as best as we can. What's your takeaway from how that game went down and how Nazem Kadri has handled all of everything he's faced in the last few days?
I think maybe like the stick that Kadri used or something should be sent to the Hall of Fame after that. I mean, I think I'm half joking about that, but that was legendary stuff from Kadri to do that in the face of, you know, the 2 days of bullshit that he kind of had to endure. A quick thing about Berube too, while we're talking about this, like whatever he did yesterday with getting asked to do the bare minimum, right, at his press conference, meaning like just say like, yeah, this was a bad look by whoever did it, you know, whatever. Berube opted out of that. That happened after we recorded the Monday show, right? So we sort of talked about, we obviously talked about the Kadri situation, but that was, you know, a little bit of, you know, context that we missed because Berube was speaking a little bit after, which, you know, I'm glad. I think that makes the schedule that we've been on the last couple of days great, because I'm glad to come on and talk about that. I just go back to what Kadri said after the game in the TNT interview, kind of coincidentally where Binnington seems to have chucked the bottle at him a couple of days before that. You know, this is something that Nazem Kadri's had to deal with his entire career. And he said it himself, you know, you got to act like it's not that big of a deal, but it is. And it's got to be something that wears on him. But yeah, it was nice to see him kind of put everything together in terms of product. That was a prime Nazem Kadri game. That was him at his best. And for it to come after, you know, the couple of days of bullshit, you know, racist ugliness from whether it's folks in Toronto or just racists abroad, it was fun to watch.
I'll say this: this is a very multi-layered situation to deal with when it comes to Nazem Kadri, mm-hmm. because there is the angle you can take where you say Nazem has done everything he can to rise above the bullshit that he has seen. I know we're saying bullshit a lot on this podcast, but it is bullshit what he's been mm-hmm. receiving across social media. And it has just been amplified with what has gone on in this series. And it happens a lot to racialized BIPOC players where mm-hmm. they're in situations where they have to play through that sort of stuff. Like if something, you've probably seen it on social media before where people are just kind of groaning and just holding their heads at the idea that if a racialized athlete in some sport does something off, the next thought is, absolutely. Oh no, their mentions are going to be littered with racist crap and derogatory remarks. I don't know if you've seen, I've seen a couple colleagues share this on Twitter, but I believe Nazem's partner was sharing like Instagram DMs that they've received after the hat trick. Like it was absolutely insane. To this point, I'm just trying to make
here. It was their cat account too, right? Yeah. Like that was where Nazem's partner. I'm very sorry. I'm blanking.
That's fine.
I'm blanking on her name right now. But that was where she shared it. Like that's the level of, you know, the level of weirdness and ugliness that people are tapping into here.
Exactly. And the point I'm trying to make here is this: we're at a point now where we're commending Nazem for rising above that sort of stuff. When do we get to a point where players like Nazem don't have to deal with that And that's not something that they have to, you know, worry about. Like, Nazem, I was talking about it with Chris Johnston on our show, the Chris Johnston mm-hmm. show, and he talked about it when he covered him in Toronto. He was a guy that, like, you could not say too much to him because he's just able to kind of push through. How much right. of that is because of the racism that he's endured that has kind of hardened him to stuff like that? And the fact that in different interviews on TNT, he's also said, like, hey, I've gone through that stuff before. Like, he's experienced it. Like, how long until we get to a point where players like Nazem don't have to worry about that? A thread I came across on Twitter from Sunny Sakdiva, who works for mm-hmm. Sportsnet, kind of made that point. And that mm-hmm. really resonated in my mind here, because we're going to hear a lot of it in the next few days about how Nazem is so brave for fighting above what has gone on and how he's a hero and all that. And yes, he deserves that. But the next step is for, you know, hockey fans who think this stuff is okay to realize it's not okay to be going in some dude's DMs and making the point that, you know, just however they want to make their point, which is normally just unhinged as it can be. That's the next step in this evolution that has to happen.
Yeah. And expect nothing. And, you know, maybe someone will outkick your expectations there. Like, I think this is something that's never going to get completely eradicated. You know, like, this is, and that's unfortunate on a whole nother level. Yeah. You know, I think you kind of touched on this with Kadri specifically. The thing that's the really frustrating thing is that this is the first wave of is the inevitability of it all, right? Where there are reasons for Blues fans to be pissed at Nazem Kadri, and there's reasons for them to, you know, whatever, chirp him in his replies or talk shit about him or whatever. He's given them a reason. He we saw what happened last year with Justin Falk. We saw what happened against Binnington. Like, I said it after the game, like, you know, that is an instance where, did he maybe not go out of his way to stop the collision there? Like, I don't know. These are valid hockey talking points, and these are things that we see over and over again from other players, from white players, and they have the privilege of not being able, pick whoever it is, Brad Marchand, Jacob Trouba, like anybody,
Tom Wilson,
anybody who's pulled dirty bullshit over the last however many years, white players who have, they have the privilege of being able to do that and not have it turn into some ugly, racialized, you know, violent kind of threat situation. And that is not the case for Nazem Kadri. Like, he can't be dirty and just or whatever, borderline or whatever you want to say, he can't do that and just move on with his life, right? Like, and deal with garden variety baseline level ugliness from the fan base. It's elevated however many levels from that, and it is 100% because he's a Muslim player. And that's what's frustrating, is that, you know, we see this in every series where there's some level of nonsense, and it's only when it's involving guys like Nazem Kadri when it turns into, you know, true ugliness. And that's the frustrating part.
What I will say to that is, in light of his past on ice transgressions that have led to suspensions at crucial moments for the teams that he's played for, mm-hmm. I see game 4 and the way that he responded as a sign of growth for him. Because I think a previous edition of Nazem Kadri might have retaliated and might have either, one, put himself in a situation where he's fighting, cost his team ultimately, and who knows what would have happened with him in the playoffs. But the fact that he stayed out of trouble, I know there's some mm-hmm. fans out there who felt that the bump that he did on David Perron after, I think it might have been Perron who might have hit him first, or it might have been Buchnevich might have hit him first mm-hmm. along the boards before they started skating towards each other in the neutral zone, and there was like a bump. Someone was trying to make the point it was a cheap shot. That's some BS. That's not a cheap shot at all. Perron and Buchnevich were the two main aggressors in that. Turns into a 5-on-3, and just at the end of that, Kadri is able to score. The fact that Kadri was able to take that situation and score not once, but thrice in that game, positively helping his team win, as opposed to just kind of stooping down to the level of Perreault and Buchnevich and gooting it up with the St. Louis Blues, that I think you can take as a tangible sign of growth from where he's been as a player, where he might have fallen into that trap, to now, where he realizes, well, not just realizes, he's known this. He is a great player in the National Hockey League. He's going through the probably the best season he's ever played as a professional. And I think that game is a culmination of what his career has led to this point. This is what everything he's gone through has led to that point, to be able to put his team in a position where they can take a massive advantage against an opponent in a series.
Yeah. And it makes you wonder whether that's a next, whether that was a result of kind of the next level focus and that he kind of had to hit last game. That was not a garden variety hockey game for Nazem Kadri. That's a game that he played coming off threats and ugliness and all, and any sort of, you know, any sorts of craziness that a hockey player can realistically deal with, right? So maybe that's what makes it funny, is that this is like an all-time backfire by those losers who were in his Instagram DMs and in his Twitter mentions and talking whatever mess they were talking. Like, that's the vibe that yesterday had for me. It's like, all right, you guys wanted this, like, here you go.
Just as you were making your point, the Department of Player Safety announced that David Perreault has been fined $5,000, the maximum allowable in the CBA, for cross-checking Nazem Kadri.
We love the maximum allowable, baby. That's one of the all-time great phrases.
I'm surprised that they fined him, not because he doesn't deserve it, but I also thought that they were just going to let the penalty hang. Mm-hmm. It was aggressive what he did. And I also wonder if this is the NHL's way of providing some kind of punishment to Perreault, because they technically can't do it after his missed elbow.
What I was going to say. Is there like a double asterisk next to that where they say like, this is actually kind of because of the missed elbow?
Yeah, that's it. They can't really do it. You didn't hit him. We can't do anything about it. But we could do something about you ramming him into the ground. Perfect. That sure looks like it to me.
Yeah. So, like, here, it's like $5,000. Thanks.
Yeah. The maximum allowable, according to
the
CBA.
Ooh, we love the maximum allowable.
Ooh, we love that maximum allowable. Ooh, so I'll tell you that.
We got to change. Someone's got to change our Twitter display name to Max Allowable. That's it.
Maximum allowable.
Might be me. Maximum allowable.
You are the guy to do it. Like, I can't do that because I don't have, like, people don't know me as, like, the silly guy on Twitter like that. Like, you could do that.
We'll see. The day is young. It's 12:45 Eastern. We'll see what happens by the time the episode drops.
That's true. In all seriousness, though, I'm glad we were able to talk about Nazem Kadri and what he's gone through over the last little while, and, you know, the points that were made about that. But the Avs do have a 3-1 series lead. We'll see in the coming days how that changes. We did say we were going to talk to Joe Smith, who covers the Tampa Bay Lightning, and we'll get into more thoughts on that. But there's one story surrounding this series, which we don't really know if it's true or not. It's really more unconfirmed reports at this point. One reporter around the story says he has strip club sources, apparently. For context here, a radio station in Florida put out a report saying that they caught a handful of Panthers players at a strip club overnight. I forget exactly which day, but I imagine it's between games 3 and 4 happened.
It would have been Sunday night going into Monday's game 4.
Yeah. Exactly. So that, again, that's just one radio station saying that. Another reporter in the area, Andy Slater, saying that he has quote unquote strip club sources. I didn't make that up. That's something he tweeted out there. We don't really know if it's true. The Panthers denied it, but we're going to get these jokes off. Am I right? I've seen people get jokes off. Oh, we go get these jokes off.
Dude, Andy Slater, I will say this. If anybody has strip club sources, it's Andy Slater. That dude has been... I'm not even kidding. That guy has worked for whatever... The name of the radio station in South Florida is escaping me. But he has... been on multiple kind of crime athlete legal issue related stuff for years and years and years. This is not the first time I've seen Andy Slater reporting on like the seedy underbelly of athlete behavior in South Florida. But the idea of having strip club sources is wild, A, and B, being able to tout them on Twitter, feeling like minor best in class. This is thank you, producer Chris. Fox Sports 840. That's where Andy Slater's coming from.
Shout out, producer Chris. Also, he said that the cat you're trying to think of from the Instagram page, the cat's name is Ashley, I think.
I believe that is Nazem's wife's name is Ashley. The cat's name is Jazzy.
Okay, the cat's name is Jazzy and Nazem's wife's name is Ashley. Apologies for that. I just want to make sure we get that cleared up in terms of continuity.
Absolutely. I forgot Ashley's name. I think it's one of those things as far as the Panthers, you know, strip club exploits are concerned. At this point, it doesn't even matter if it's true. Like it's entered the pantheon of like of playoff stories, and this to me I think is what we've been missing all these years, because this is the second year of Tampa versus Florida. It had never happened since 1996 or however long it's been. It was only a matter of time for when we had the Battle of Florida for it to turn into, you know, strip club wars, because you're talking about South Florida and you're talking about Tampa, Florida, two notorious spots for that stuff, right? Like it's just a miracle it took 2 years for this to happen.
I would have been content if we had like a Kodak Black sighting. We had one in round one, but I thought in round two he'd be like up on the Jumbotron, or at least we would have made a bigger deal about it.
I can't believe like they should have done what it took to get Kodak Black in his customary spot, right? Like maybe that's why they lost. We needed more Kodak Black involvement here. Like recapture some of that January energy that the Panthers had when they were rolling. That's why they're out.
Essentially, so both Kodak and the Panthers both needed some hip action in this series, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you could say that. here's the other thing that I wanted to say about that. And look, you don't want teams hitting up strip clubs in series under any circumstance. This is not a Lou Williams situation, right? A couple years ago, whenever Lou was playing for the Sixers and he went down to Atlanta to get some wings from the Gold Club or whatever it was. Not quite.
What was the name of that? Magic City. Is it Magic City?
Magic City. It was Gold Club. That is another Atlanta strip club. It does not have the wings that.
Do you have strip club sources, Sean Gentile?
No,
this is what that's not like to me. You know way more about these clubs than I do.
I might. Who knows? Maybe it's some wow. Point, okay. It's some point in my life I might have had Pittsburgh strip club sources. I'm an old man now, Julian. You know this. But if there were ever a time for a team to say screw it, we're going to Mons Venus or whatever it was, it'd be when you were down 3-0 to the defending champs. Like that shit was a wrap. That series was over. So like it didn't matter whether they you know, you could have given them 12 more games and they weren't going to get to four against the Lightning. So I kind of respect the impulse to just be like, all right, we're out. It's 3-0. Like salute. It's been a great season. We're going to take a couple hours off the clock here.
Okay. I'll say this though. Like there's a part of me that doesn't really care all that much.
No, I don't care at all.
Yeah. It's like athletes like off the clock, essentially. Like okay. I can understand if you're a team and you don't want your players doing that and being out late at 3 a.m. I can understand that if it directly affects the team's performance, if that actually ended up being a true story. Mm-hmm. And like Jonathan Huberdeau. Okay, let me not even put players' names in this.
Chris is
if this ends up being true,
Chris is gonna have to go and beep out that like the names.
Players' names. I don't want Alan Walsh getting mad at me. That's what I'm really worried about.
Right.
All that to say, if it got to a point where you could directly say this affected someone's performance. Kind of like, what was the name of the DB of the Falcons who got in trouble that one night before the Super Bowl?
Oh, Eugene Robinson. Yeah.
Eugene Robinson.
Oh, he got in big trouble, yeah, too.
Oh, he got in big trouble. But that's like, but like, come on. Like, you can't ignore that. But like a strip club? Like, okay. Like, I mean, all right. So you're hanging out. You're doing your thing overnight, whatever. That's your responsibility. You're a grown man. People frequent those types of clubs all the time. I don't necessarily care. But in the interest of this segment, we gonna get these jokes off.
Like I said, man, it was over. It was over. Let them do what they want. You guys are down 3-0 to the champs. Salute.
I'll say
enjoy your offseason. It was a wrap on the series at that point.
Jonathan Huberto said, I think after game three, like, we're down 3-0. Who cares? We can come back. I did not believe him. I was like, nah, you're done. I'm sorry, bro. You're done. You're done. You're done. The Tampa Bay Lightning are inevitable at this point. Like, they are the team. They woke up.
Yeah. And we're going to talk to Joe in detail about this for all the reasons that, you know, first sweep of the John Cooper era, by the way. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
Which I still can't believe.
It's wild. But yeah, I think Joe's the man when it comes to breaking down what is going on with that team and why it happened and how they got there. And, you know, we did not bring up the strip club incident with him because we knew
that,
because we knew that we were going to talk about it ourselves. Leave him out of this, man.
I genuinely think it was for the best that we didn't divulge it to Joe's strip club sources, if he has any.
I've been out with Joe a few times. Joe is karaoke sources. I don't know about strip club sources. Joe's got karaoke bar sources.
Karaoke and strip club, two different types of fun times.
those are on the other ends of the fun spectrum.
All right, before we get into more trouble, here is Joe Smith.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Joe. Good to see you, man. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you boys doing?
You know what? It's been an interesting time. Basically working as the fill-in for the fill-in. You know?
He's the e-bug. Julian is the e-bug. I think that's what I decided on.
Yeah, that's basically it. Just e-bug stuff. But no e-bugs when it comes to the Tampa Bay Lightning as they get the job done over the Florida Panthers. I still can't believe, you know, we know the Lightning are really good. And we know how the Battle of Florida went last year, but they done and dusted the Florida Panthers in four games and kept them off the score sheet mainly and did all these things to ensure themselves a sweep. What was it like covering that, obviously, from the vantage point of the Tampa Bay Lightning, a series that was essentially done so decisively as it was?
It's crazy to think that, like, a week and a half ago, they were facing elimination against the Leafs in game six. You know, people were worried about Andrei Vasilevsky giving up 3 goals per game. The Leafs had him on the ropes. Like, was this the end of the era here? Was this the end of their run? And, you know, what? Six games later, you know, they've lost since. They've given up, you know, 5 goals in that last stretch. You know, Vasilevsky's put himself on Mount Rushmore here. Like, it's funny how things happen in the playoffs where things change so quickly. I don't think I anticipated a sweep going into this series. I know the numbers look, you know, 13-3 goals for versus against for the Panthers. You know, Vasilevsky did save 10 goals above expectation in this series, so that's pretty much ties it up right there. And these games were close for the most part in the first few, and you remember the buzzer beater by Ross Colton in game two, or that one could have gone overtime. But seemed like they were hanging on by a thread there in that Leaf series, and all of a sudden they, you know, look like they're ready to go for three. So it's the much-needed rest, though, for them, this group. They literally broke bones to get through the series, and they look literally exhausted after a four game sweep. So getting it done last night was so important.
On the Panthers end of things, what did you see from them? Were they gassed? Because you look at them and you see a team, they played whatever, 82 games, almost 92 games now. Had to come back a million times in the regular season, had to expend a lot of energy against the Caps. On the Florida end of things, like, did they just seem like they hit the wall? Like, what did you see from them?
Well, I mean, I think the Lightning kind of just broke their will a little bit. Yeah. You know, like Brunette said a couple of times, like they wanted it more. They showed that they know how to win, and we were trying to figure it out. And the Lightning went through that before. They had to go through some hard times and some heartbreak to win. And I think that the Lightning showed their experience in this series. They showed their moxie, their toughness, 77 block shots to 44 in the run here. You know, the Panthers are a talented team. I think they're probably maybe even in some areas more talented than the Lightning as far as some of the depth they had there. But the Lightning just knew how to win, and they leaned on him and leaned on him, leaned on him. And I think by the time it got to game three, they looked like they were kind of defeated. Interesting offseason for them, you know, with the coaching situation, who they bring back. They bring Brunette back and their best players. I mean, I think Huberdeau and Barkov had combined 3 points in that four games. And you're not going to win, you know, many series if that's the case. And even if Bobrovsky played, I thought, decently well in this series, it wasn't his fault. But you need more from your top guys, like the Lightning had from Kucherov and the like.
The Lightning have killer instinct. Like, when I remember that Ross Colton goal from game two, I think of the Blake Coleman goal from the Stanley Cup final the year earlier, where he scores that diving goal in a game the Canadiens absolutely need to win and eliminates any chance of that. And that series was pretty much over after that. I'm glad we brought up that Colton goal in game two. Even if it was in game two, just for my money, just the series was over after that. The Panthers were trying their hardest to get a power play goal. They couldn't get it. And then the Lightning find a way to score. Like, they've been inevitable all round. We should have seen this coming from a two-time defending Stanley Cup champion team that maybe might have been an underdog in the first round. But this is a Tampa Bay Lightning team that has shown the killer instinct at different times in this postseason when they needed to, and it's paid off for them, especially against the Florida Panthers. Are you seeing that similarly as well?
Yeah, I mean, look at that last 10 seconds of game two, right? I think Florida looked like a team that wanted to play for overtime. They're like, oh, let's just hold on here. Hit your fourth line out there, second D pair. Let's just let the time run out. The Lightning's like, there's 8 seconds left. There's no way they can go end-to-end. Let's just see what happens here. You got Jan Ruda, and you got Palat get the puck deep, and then Kucherov thinking 3, 4, 5 plays ahead, knows what's coming, and you have two defensemen converge behind the net to stop Kucherov when no one's in front. And, you know, Lightning have the guys from the Ross Coltons to the Kucherovs who can deliver that moment. And that was kind of a moment where, like, okay, game two's over. I find a hard time to believe any team can beat the Lightning 4 out of 5, especially they haven't lost 2 in a row in the last 3 postseasons. So I think that would be right. I think that was a time when it was kind of pretty much done.
How good is Vasilevskiy, man? I mean, once you saw him dialed in game 7 against Toronto, that's when I felt like, uh-oh, like the Leafs had a chance to, take care of business here. And now he's locked in. That's bad news for everybody else. But his play in the series, like, how does that stack up with some of the stuff that we've seen from him over the last couple of years?
I think Victor Hedman said last night, I think that last night's game was the most impressed he's ever been with Vasilevskiy. You know, I think in this past series or so, like, Vasilevskiy hasn't had a steal a game. I mean, the guys have been playing so well in front of him. Like, again, compared to the first game 1 to game 5 against the Leafs versus the last 6 games, like, so much difference in terms of how they're playing in front of them, not getting up the rush chances or those great days. But I think last night, I mean, 49 saves and a regulation shutout victory in a clinching game. That was as locked in as seen him in a long time. But the thing is, I think people or fans probably need to appreciate what they're watching here. They're watching one of the all-time greats in his prime at age 27. You know, giving them a chance of making history here, right? Like, you rarely look back on a career while it's happening and saying, this is pretty, you know, I wonder if people watch Wayne Gretzky and said, oh, this is, you know, we're not going to see this ever again. But this is something special that they're watching. And, you know, going into camp, the reason they said they could win a three-peat was, if you have 88, you have a chance. And I think postseason's kind of showing that down to their last, you know, period in game 6 at home against the Leafs, and they tied up in overtime. And that was it.
I know sometimes with teams that win in sweeps in the playoffs, one comment that'll come around with those teams is, oh, they have to be careful about the rest that they'll have, because maybe when they come back, they might be a little bit rusty. How do you feel about the Lightning getting the opportunity to rest after the grueling first round series they had, the series against the Panthers, and thinking about all these other cup runs they've had over these last 2 years?
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, no one wants to be rusty, but I think they'll take, you know, the amount of hockey that they've played the last 2.5 years is incredible. And I thought one reason why I didn't know if they could win three going into the playoffs here was I didn't know if they had enough in the tank to beat the Leafs, then the Panthers, then go through, you know, that's a lot, and then to beat the Avs in the final. So I think getting just that extra few days here a week, you know, the injuries that they have are like Braden Point. We don't know if he'll be back, but we don't know the injuries specifically the guys that are playing through. Nick Paul and Hagel's playing through something. Steven Stamkos thinks playing through something. There's a few guys that you don't know are playing through that need just a few days to, you know, not have to go through these battles. And the way they're winning these games is not a finesse game. It's a hard-nosed game. This is, you know, it's a man's game that they've been winning. And so they're not on the perimeter, you know, floating around. There's a lot of guys putting themselves in front of pucks. So get a few more days here, regardless of who they're playing. I think it'll be a big boost for them, considering how much mileage they put on.
Isn't that's one of those things that maybe you worry about with less experienced teams, right? Like the gap in between series. That's a concern. It's a valid concern, but it's one of those things where, you know, it's like it's the same as the people who are worried about the Lightning in the way they were playing in like February or whatever. That's stuff for other teams. Yeah. Those are not concerns you harbor about the two-time defending champs, right?
Yeah, and you talk to guys that have won multiple cups, the Potvins and those guys, and they say, like, you know, when you have a champion, never bet against them, because they know what it takes. They know how much you need to go to. You know what extra is left in your tank that you didn't think you had before. And, you know, the little details that are so important. And so I think you're right. The Lightning didn't play great down the stretch, and they had their struggles. But then once they got to playoff time, they didn't flip a switch, but they kind of got smacked into focus, their habits that they've been used to win these championships. And I think it just really, turned for them, you know, obviously when Braden Point got injured and they can, you know, when they lose a top player, it really made everybody kind of band together and say, we can't win 3 games 4-3 or 5-4. You know, we can't afford to do that. And that really kind of locked everybody in together. And you've been seeing the results of that.
This is the first sweep they've ever had under Cooper.
This is nuts.
That's insane.
They've been swept twice, but they never swept anybody.
Yeah. I mean, it's clearly John Cooper internalizing the snub from the Jack Adams finalists. I'm sure that made him really mad, and he just wanted to go out and show everybody that he really deserved to be in that conversation.
I think the image I think of when I think of like John Cooper and worried about the Jack Adams is the video they show all the time of him in the backyard of his Santa Maria Island house with the pool and the cigar and like the cup on his lap and being like,
I think
the guy gives, you know, Jack whatever about the Jack Adams, right? Like, I mean, certainly he's deserving, and I think like him and Sullivan get the shaft a bit in terms of, you know, when you coach, you know, elite teams, maintain that elite level and the motivation and the drive and all the different things he did in the series to out coach Brunette, right? The different adjustments made on the rush chances and on the penalty kill and the power play, like, you know, so I don't think he cares about that. I think there's some guys like him and Sullivan who deserve that honor if it ever comes to the be. But if you have a team like this, you may never win one, you know, it's hard to go from bad to good, but it's also hard to keep greatness alive, and that's what they've been doing.
Considering the fact that it ended in a sweep, and you mentioned the fact that John Cooper got the best of Andrew Brunette in that series, excluding all the Stanley Cup final clinching series, I'm wondering where this ranks for John Cooper in terms of his coaching jobs against playoff teams. It has to be right up there in terms of work that he's done in order to get his guys ready for a series.
I think so, especially, I mean, you go into a series without Braden Point, like an engine for your team and a key part of your power play, a team that was rightly favored, you know, against the Lightning their season. They're the highest scoring team that the NHL has seen in 25 years, right? Like, it wasn't a fluke. And they had they scored one goal in 3 games during the regular season, once since January. They only scored one goal all 4 games of this series, and they're losing their first shutout since last year, Game 6. But all the many adjustments that they made, they took advantage of like the zone defense that Florida used, basically, and they just got everybody in front of the net, and they kind of used their quick puck movement to get all those chances early on. They didn't give them any rush chances. That was their bread and butter. Yep. And they made Florida play a patient kind of prodding game where it made them dump it in and try to fight for every inch. And once you get through those 6'2", 240-pound defensemen, you have Vasilevsky there. And so the margin of error is pretty thin. I think you saw them get frustrated, I think. Panthers did as far as offensively. They wouldn't come in easy as they thought it would be. And it reminded me of the Lightning in 19. They scored like 5 goals a game. And they went to Columbus and they couldn't score. They got frustrated. They got ticked off and took some dumb penalties and just like threw their arms up. Like, what's going on?
One last one for you, Joe. You mentioned Braden Point. The fact that the Lightning were able to get through that second series without arguably their best center, impressive. What's the latest with him and his injury? Looked pretty bad from that Toronto Maple Leaf series. Are we going to see him at all in these playoffs again?
It's hard to say at this point. Like Cooper said, he'd be day to day after game one, but there hasn't really been any much updates since then. I don't believe he's skated since then, or at least Cooper said no update on that. We know how tough he is and one of the toughest players, you know, on this team, but I think, you know, all of us have been going under the assumption that, you know, until we hear otherwise, we're not assuming he's going to be back anytime soon. So you've been in the gym working out, teammates say, and been around the team and been a good presence. But when you look the way he got injured and the way he tried to skate after that and his reaction on the bench when he couldn't go, just how devastated he was, he kind of, and I don't want to read body language, but that seemed like a guy who knew who'd be out for a bit at the worst time of year to do that. So I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV or on The Athletic, but I just, you know, we'll probably find out more in a couple of days, but you know, I think that the mantra that they use to win this series, they'll be able to use next series if they don't have them, which is pretty successful this time around.
You can just hang out with the rest of those guys and watch the Rangers and the Hurricanes beat the hell out of each other for the next few days. That's fine. he can just chill.
Yeah. He can just chill and watch it. And I think they're hoping to go 7, right? And they wouldn't be playing until after Memorial Day. It's been an incredible run to watch. I mean, 10 straight series, only a couple teams in history have won more than 10 straight series, Islanders and the Montreal Canadiens. So it's
crazy.
They're pretty much rare air right now. And, you know, like Oscar Horn said, you know, well, 12 sounds better, doesn't it? You know, so we'll see if they can get the final 8 here.
The only thing that's almost as impressive as the Lightning winning all those consecutive series in a row and getting those cup championships are the people who get to cover them like over and over. And like, you've been there for like every series and like, you have an opportunity to cover a 3-peat here. Like, how does it feel for you just personally getting that opportunity to cover a team like that so closely?
It's pretty wild. I mean, consider like, you know, getting a chance to see guys since they've been drafted to the Kucherovs and those guys from the day one and Braden Points. And then all of a sudden seeing them getting named next to guys in NHL history that are one of the best. So, it's much better now, I think, than the first year because it was the bubble and I watched every game on TV. So that was a little different way to cover a championship team. And I watched them win the cup on my dad's couch in Michigan, you know, just hanging out, you know. So being there in person last year and, you know, when they won in Tampa and then being here for the playoffs and being there on interviewing people in person, you get a different feel and vibe about what that's like to go through. And so, yeah, it's definitely a historic moment and you want your coverage to match that historic moment.
Joe, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for hanging out with Sean and myself. Looking forward to the rest of the coverage from yourself during the rest of this postseason. Enjoy it, my man. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. And we'll do it again hopefully soon.
Yes. Yes, we will.
In a couple weeks. or a few weeks at the cup final. Yeah. Just pencil them in. It's over.
Yeah, just put them in there.
We'll talk to you later.
Tampa versus Colorado. Tampa versus Edmonton. Calgary.
That's bulletin board material, man. Better watch that.
That's fine. Yeah, we'll get we'll have Kurz or Sivian can hang that on their wall. Whatever. It can be bulletin board material for the writer. That's obviously what it is.
Nathan McKinnon will listen to this podcast be like, what? I would love to see a Colorado-Tampa series, though. That'd be unreal.
That's the dream.
I'm rooting for that now. Yep. I'm rooting for that. I wanted that 2 years ago.
In last year.
Yeah, in last year.
In this year, because it's the second round and the Avs are going to find some way to blow this. Okay, see you later, Joe.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Joe, thank you again in all seriousness. Dude, good luck for the rest of the playoffs.
Thanks so much. Happy to be the backup here today. So.
I think, hold on. We're all backups here. This is like,
except
this
Chris.
Is
Chris is the only person who's supposed to be here.
Call me Brian Elliott, man. Moose is loose. So take care, guys.
Yep. Peace.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sean, we've finished our look back at games that took place on the holiday Monday. Mm-hmm. Let's look ahead to games that are going to take place on the Tuesday. Beautiful. Between Carolina and New York and Calgary and Edmonton, which of these two matchups are you looking forward to the most?
Try not to give a cop-out answer here. I think for this game, as in the ones that are going to happen on Tuesday night, I think it has to be Carolina, New York, because of what Gerard Gallant said, because of the Ty Domi, you know, Ty Domi. That's a Freudian slip. The Max Domi.
I've seen both play.
It could be either, honestly. Because the Max Domi extracurriculars, right? At the end of that game. I think that's sort of what, at least for tonight, that's what's got my attention. And over the course of the series, you know, we're going Battle of Edmonton, but tonight specifically, I'm very interested in seeing what goes down between the Hurricanes and the Rangers.
Yeah, that's interesting because I was taking Battle of Alberta because. Mm-hmm. You say Battle of Edmonton. I know you slipped up there.
I said Battle of Edmonton? Oh, my God.
You did. But here's the thing, though. I'm surprised at how Edmonton has played throughout these last three games. And I'm including game one where they allowed nine goals. You know what the most points after that game one? Connor McDavid. One goal, three assists. He had a four-point night after game one. He has 23 points in 10 games throughout this postseason. Like, Connor McDavid... We are seeing the best version of Connor McDavid possible this year with the way that he had the career best numbers. I get it. The Hart Trophy is going to go to Austin Matthews. You can make your points about how he deserves it. I get it. But it is going to look very funny if the Edmonton Oilers make it to the conference final or the Stanley Cup final and they award the Hart Trophy to Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid's just going to be sitting here and be like, so I didn't do nothing this year?
I know, seriously. I'm not saying
I disagree. I'm just saying it's going to look funny.
This is the problem with... And I'm all for requiring votes to be in at the end of the regular season, but the problem is when this gets announced, because like you said, whenever the Hart, you know, actually is awarded, people have all this baggage built up after whatever happens in the postseason without kind of the without the realization that, you know, this shit's due in April or whatever. I kind of go back to something Daryl Sutter said after that first game, and I thought Haley Salvian wrote a solid piece about, you know, the kind of the leveling up that we've seen from Connor McDavid. Sutter said it after the first game. He was like, if he gets 4 points every night, it's going to be, you know, good luck in the next round, Connor. And I think we're seeing the truth that was in that statement. That last game. And whatever the final was, it was 5-2 or whatever.
We don't remember scores around here. I forget.
Can't even remember. I'm so bad with scores, man.
I'm terrible with scores.
But it was 3 points, 3 points, or 3 points from Connor McDavid, and he didn't score. And you have the natural hat trick for Evander Kane and all that. I mean, and Mike Smith was good. Yada yada. There's all these different reasons to feel, you know, good coming out of that game. If you're an Edmonton Oilers fan, that game happened, and that result was the result because of Connor McDavid. And Haley kind of broke down, you know, just showing the damage that he did and the different ways that he did it, and the fact that the Flames didn't really have much of an answer for him, despite throwing the kitchen sink at that dude. I think that's what's taken me in this series, is looking at all the different things the Flames have tried, where, like, do you give him space? Do you play him tight? Like, on and on and on. You go down the list of all the different stuff, all the different, you know, tactics that they've used on this dude, and none of them have worked. And, you know, over the course of a 7-game series, I'm still, you know, content to pick the Flames, because I do think they're the better 5-on-5 team, and their roster is far, far superior. But the fact that this series is where it is, and the fact that the Edmonton Oilers are where they are after the start to that series, forget the Flames series against the Kings. This dude has dragged them there. And he's got the potential to drag them a little further. It is wild.
Yeah. I still think of that Connor McDavid goal he scored against the Kings, I want to say in game six, where he willed himself to the net. Like, a lot of highlight reel goals we see from Connor McDavid, he is just, it's just effortless. He's using the skill to make something happen. That goal he scored, where you see him celebrating a la Nail Yakupov going to center ice, that was pure sheer will. And that was a sign of a different Connor McDavid we were going to see. As for this series against the Flames, there are Flames fans who are missing Chris Tanev. To the point I'm coming across one tweet here, the Twitter ad is not that Kristen. If Chris Tanev needs a limb, I will give it to him. That's how much Flames fans miss Chris Tanev, because he is the guy who would be normally used to stop Connor McDavid. And unfortunately, they do not have him at their disposal just as of yet. There was a tweet that our good buddy Harmon Dial put up a couple of days ago. How massive is Chris Tanev's absence so far this series? Tanev historically slowed McDavid's line. McDavid career head-to-head versus Tanev at 5-on-5. 252, 41 time on ice. 8 goals for, 11 goals against. Just 1.9 goals for per 60. 51% shot attempt share. 45.8 expected goal share. That's all natural stat trick stuff.
Because that's all they need. They just need someone who can slow down McDavid. And I think Tanev is that guy. You know, he's consistently their most reliable defensive guy. And again, to go back to, I mean, Haley brought this up again in what she wrote about, you know, that series so far. The way that Daryl Sutter uses him, he's like the security blanket for Oliver Shillington, who's at a rough go of it this series. The fact that Tanev is out has also necessitated playing Nikita Zadorov and Erik Gudbranson a little bit more. Like, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, falls into place whenever you have Chris Tanev in your lineup and you can count on, 21 solid minutes a night from him. And that is the difference, I think, between Calgary winning this series and losing it.
So yeah, the game fours on the Tuesday, not the holiday Monday. Pretty exciting stuff, of course. There's one thing we want to do before we get to the end of today's Athletic Hockey Show featuring the backups, myself and Sean Gentile. I put out a Twitter question. Who is your favorite / best backup goalie in NHL history? So I kind of put best and favorite because, you know, maybe some people might feel like, man, this guy was the absolute best. But some people might put up a goalie who they have sentimental value to. I know for me, growing up in Montreal, I always liked seeing Jeff Hackett play games. I don't think he was necessarily the best at playing, but like, his mask was always cool. So,
oh man,
I like Jeff Hackett has like a place in my heart.
Those are the kind of guys who you gravitate towards, right? Like, you don't need much of a reason to like a backup goalie. It can be because they have a cool mask. Those are they're the cult heroes for a reason. The guy I always go to, and this came up in the answers, is Johan Hedberg. He wasn't quite a backup. He wasn't quite a backup when Pittsburgh acquired him, you know, back a million years ago, but he had one of those runs in the playoffs that like that hero stuff is made of, right? Where you see these guys go on these tears and that's how you end up. Like, I love some of these names. Andrew Hammond, I feel like he comes up on the Tuesday show every couple weeks. They're the best, man. Everyone loves a good backup. Everyone loves a good backup goaltender, baby.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, the Hamburglar comes up. Chris Terreri, name mentioned. Peter Budaj is also a really good one because of the Ned Flanders logo on his helmet. He comes up. And also a lot of Canadiens fans obviously remember him a little bit more fondly, probably a little bit more fondly than André Racicot, Red Light Racicot, as he would get. Like, the people would make jokes about how he'd get like a little like suntan on the back of his neck from the red light coming on. That's behind great. Him so much. That's pretty good.
We got a Louis Domingue reference, but it was in reference to a couple years ago whenever he was with Calgary. Matt Pisco says, Louis Domingue made a good impression for the Canucks during the bubble. Of course, that was playing with the Calgary Flames. That's something you never want to see. I think Louis Domingue also made a good impression on the New York Rangers a couple weeks ago for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
That's it, man. Like, he was one. I mean, I know they went to Tristan Jarry in game seven, but we were, he could imagine that, like, a third string dude being pressed into service and helping his team get to a game seven. I know they had a lead, they blew it, but like, you can't ask for anything better from Louis Domingue.
The funny part of the Louis Domingue experience is, like, right from the jump, you're like, all right, this probably isn't going to end well for the Penguins. Like, there's a ding, and God bless him, he's a chef. Everyone loves spicy pork and broccoli. Everybody loved that, but you could sense from the jump that probably wasn't going to work out for him. But again, man, this is what the playoffs are about. It's quasi random guys getting pressed into duty, and for good or bad, like, we're going to remember him. We're going to talk about him.
Wait, hold on for a second. Let me just pause on spicy pork and broccoli for a second.
Yeah.
Because I forgot who shared that photo of the actual dish that he ate, and he said it was not good. Mm-hmm. It looked nasty. He had every right to not say that was good. It was a nasty looking dish.
You know who that was? It was Mike DeFabo, my buddy who covers the Penguins for the Post-Gazette. And I was livid that I wasn't in New York for that part of the series, because that's my beat, baby. I would have been the guy who was sitting in that restaurant choking down as much because it was brutal, right? Like that as far as spicy pork and broccoli goes, really, really rough. But yeah, I mean, that's a boots on the ground journalism gets you. So shout out to Mike D in Pittsburgh.
I mean, that the way that pork looked like boot was on that.
that was a chunked up belt, I think. That was some low grade stuff. Yeah, pretty brutty brutal. I mean, that's like those are the spoils of being a backup goaltender. Like, how many times have guys eaten stuff like that and just not had to worry about it? And you're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever, man. I'm just gonna eat this crappy locker room food.
It's just here.
Might as well. How else am I gonna feed myself?
Someone's got to eat it. It's a sin. Yeah. It's a sin to throw away food. We gotta take care of business.
How many overtimes am I gonna sit through while this crappy spicy pork is gonna stay in my stomach? I have to play. What?
Where's Evan? is Casey hurt? Is Casey hurt out there? He looks hurt. You're like, oh
my God. That's it. Then you feel your stomach rumbling, like, oh my God.
Me and you, couple of Louis Domingues, baby. That's us.
That's basically been us on the Tuesday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. Sean, thank you so much for hanging out, man. I mean, we've only hung out once in our lives together. This is the first time we've done it over podcast. So
yeah, it's fun.
This is fun. This is fun as it could get.
You know what's coming up soon? The draft.
The draft.
See you then, baby.
See you then, baby. Oh, man. Oh, we are going to get in trouble, aren't we?
No comment.
Don't get in too much trouble.
No comment.
Oh, my God. Don't get in too much trouble, okay? Please. I'm begging you.
Hopefully Andy Slater isn't circulating in Montreal.
I said, don't get in trouble. Try to get me in trouble in my own city. Anyway, thank you for listening to the Athletic Hockey Show with myself and Sean Gentile today. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform and leave a rating and a review. We'd really appreciate it if you thought all of our jokes about strip club sources were funny. Subscribe to the Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. Start with a 30-day free trial, then just 99 cents a month after that. And right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for $1 a month for 6 months when you visit theathletic.com/hockey show. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new show. Hopefully it won't be nearly as problematic.